From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm Hunter Deusing in Dallas, Texas. And joining me in Melbourne, Australia is Mr. Stuart Bulk. Say hello, Stu.
Good afternoon, evening, morning, whatever your time zone may be.
It's all over the place here. And in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado is Mr. John Grace. The crew's all here. Say hello, John.
Hello.
And so this week, guys, we don't really have a topic. We're just going to talk about stuff we've been watching lately, you know? Nothing really aligns.
Like no one's ever done that before, man.
I know. Well, we've done that before, too.
No, no.
we're good at that.
We were like, we need to get an episode out, but we don't really have time to watch anything. And no.
You're in transition with the house move, and we're lucky to get you on, really, with the...
For the kids at home, I just bought a house, so you know I've been moving. But you know tonight I'm kind of free, so I was like, yeah, I can jump on.
Yeah. So, what have we all been watching?
Well, I'll start off. I have a few movies I've watched lately, but I've been watching a lot of TV stuff. In fact, the wife and I, one of our kind of rituals lately after work is to watch X-Files.
Really?
Which, yeah, I only saw a few episodes here and there when I was in high school.
All right.
Never really got into X-Files. And my wife's a huge fan. Like, she's seen the whole show. And, prior to our marriage and after, we were watching Twin Peaks. And my behest, and she became a pretty big fan of that show. And so, you know, it seemed like kind of a quasi-related thing to watch X-Files. So we jumped over to that, and we're almost done with the first season. So, you know, I'm kind of getting my feet wet with X-Files. David Duchovny plays a normal, heteronormative male in this show as opposed to... Wait, stop there.
So have you gone all gaga over Gillian Anderson like the rest of the world supposedly did?
Oh, well, my wife will go, she's so beautiful.
Really?
We watched the show.
I mean, she's okay. I mean, I'd plug her one, but I mean, that's about
it. I think she's pretty, you know.
Really? Just, I don't know. She's certainly not unattractive, but I mean, my God, guys will walk around with boners everywhere. I was like, come on.
Yeah, no, that was, I remember when I was younger, that was a meme, guys being in love with Gillian Anderson. With Scully, you know, so that's been kind of fun to watch that. And I didn't realize how Twin Peaks related it is. Like, Scully's dad is Bobby's dad from Twin Peaks. And you even have an episode where Hawk from Twin Peaks plays the sheriff of an Indian reservation.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, and you know, of course,
wait, don't go there. Don't go there.
Yeah, I know.
Watch yourself, boy.
Sensitive territory, man. But so
there was a hot rumor at the time, Hunter, around 1997, that there was going to be an X-Files Twin Peaks crossover.
Oh, interesting.
And they were going to allow Lynch and Frost to finish the Twin Peaks story on the X-Files, and that Chris Carter was a big fan. But then in various media interviews I saw, Chris Carter said he never watched Twin Peaks, so I don't know. I don't know how true that rumor was, if they were really actively courting such a thing.
That was some fanboy fiction right there.
Probably. And this is pre-internet. This is before all that stuff was big, so.
And Duchovny was in Twin Peaks as a transvestite.
Right. I think the idea he would play both roles and it was supposed to be weird or whatever, but I can imagine the rights and actually fusing those two would be just completely out of pocketbook for Fox News, or I mean Fox Network.
Right. And you know, but I'm enjoying X-Files. I think it's fun. It sort of scratches I have a fondness for 90s conspiracy theory culture.
Right.
You know, the coast to coast AM, like you know, Art Bell.
Yeah, I miss all that. I kind of miss that aspect where I didn't have to take it seriously. Now they seem determined to make me take it seriously.
Oh, I know. Now,
and everything.
It's like, you know, hey, world, we don't want you to take this conspiracy theorist Alex Jones seriously, so let's all collude in a conspiracy to deplatform it.
Oh, boy, is that... And that backfires because Alex Jones is a total carny. You cannot deplatform a carny like that and not have it backfire on you.
Exactly.
So, but, you know, it definitely scratches that itch. I've been watching that, and when the wife's not around, I watch Hannibal. I've been watching season one of Hannibal, which is pretty good. Enjoying it.
Oh, you like it more than John did anyway.
Yeah, you like it more than I did.
Oh, yeah, you hated it?
I didn't care for it. I thought it was overly stylized, and they were screwing up Red Dragon. I know they're trying to separate themselves from the previous movie versions and stuff, but, you know, why look like every other TV show and why not try to hide that you're filming it in Canada? You know,
it should be.
No, I will say I'm a kind of blind Mads Mikkelsen fan. You know, I really enjoy him, and I enjoy his Hannibal Lecter. It's nothing like the Hopkins Lecter.
Well, I prefer the Brian Cox Lecter.
The Brian Cox Lecter's like, you know, that guy is, you know, he feels like a real crazy person.
Yeah, that's a superior. That's still the best Hannibal Lecter on.
You know, Manhunter is the best Thomas Harris adaptation, hands down. I think, yeah. I mean, Silence of the Lambs is a great movie, too. You can't knock that.
No, right. It is good. But Manhunter is just, it's a masterpiece in my book.
Manhunter is great.
Yeah.
It's just so good. Everything else movie-wise is disposable.
Right.
And I think I said in the episode that John and I did about about Red Dragon that they could have really taken that book and done one chapter a week and made it like a 12 to 15 part series, even over a couple of seasons, and done it right, but they obviously haven't done that.
Right.
You know, lost opportunity right there.
Yeah, the remake that Brett Ratner did.
Oh, don't get me started. It's so bad.
It's really
bad. Luckily, Brett Ratner's being Stalinized out of the industry. Completely me too'd. So.
Oh,
because he raped Natasha Henstridge 20 years ago, so.
What? Really? I didn't hear about
it. I didn't know that one.
It was she came out and said that, you know, she wasn't a known actress at the time. She was just a model, and, you know, he wouldn't let her leave the room unless she blew him and stuff, and he was abusive, and, you know, it was like a legit rape. It was pretty bad. And after that, Brett Ratner suddenly was disappearing from credits, and, you know, the announcement of Rush Hour 4 that they put out there, I think, was unplugged pretty quick. It was interesting.
His name has disappeared from news completely. I mean,
vanished.
Good.
But I didn't hear the Henstridge thing.
She wasn't the only one either. Like, other women had come forward and said he was.
Yeah, I think I'd heard other women, but I didn't hear any names that I knew.
Right. But Natasha Henstridge, actually, she said, this is what happened, and, you know, and I've had to deal with the memory of this over the years, and, you know, it's time to quit being quiet about it.
Good for her, because Brett Ratner sucks, and his movies are crimes against art. So
supposedly he only got directing gigs because his agent thought he was cute.
Well, and the reason we can thank Steven Spielberg for Brett Ratner's career because he financed his student film.
Oh God! Okay.
So thanks, Steve.
Yeah, they're coming for you too, Spielberg.
Yeah,
no, he's
the world will know your secrets.
Steven Spielberg is the white whale of the film industry. If Me Tours can harpoon him, that is the big get, you know.
Yeah, so. Crispin Glover. What it called him out on an online essay that got pulled.
But yeah,
that's what started the whole Spielberg and, you know, pedophilia rumors and stuff.
Well, I read that years ago, the Crispin Glover Spielberg essay, and, you know, that was an almonds activating essay.
Was that the what is thingo?
Yeah, it was. It was kind of related to what is it?
Oh, what is it? Yeah, yeah.
Crispin Glover was making these movies, and you know, he was kind of making them as anti sort of conventional Hollywood, i.e. anti Spielberg movies. But he wrote this essay that was extremely you were kind of going, what does he know? Oh, it's kind of a Corey Feldman type thing where you go, what does this guy know exactly? Because when you look at Spielberg's history, there's a lot of stuff there. You know, the Twilight Zone movie, John Landis, obviously, we know that guy is responsible for a lot of horrific stuff on that film. But Spielberg definitely left that guy out to twist in the wind. You know, Spielberg knew what was going on and took no responsibility.
And supposedly Spielberg was on the set that night. That's the big rumor.
I didn't know that.
The big rumor is Spielberg was on the set and he fled. Rumor. This is alleged.
Spielberg was like...
Bad enough on Landis's head that he had little kids in Vic Morrow.
Working illegally.
Exactly.
They were not working under the child labor laws.
You know that John Landis supports amnesty for illegal immigrants.
Of course.
Because he has experience using them.
He gave us the great Max Landis. So.
Oh, God.
Hollywood loves their cheap labor that they can, the human lives that they can, expend on the set. And, of course, Spielberg, John Landis and Steven Spielberg, that ended their relationship because, of course, John Landis knew Steven Spielberg was partially responsible and Spielberg left him to deal with it.
Yeah.
So, that they were buddy buddy. And after Twilight Zone, they were not friends anymore. And,
definitely not.
And to compound the crime against art, Spielberg decided to do Kick the Can instead of whatever he was going to do to make it a more positive experience.
Was he going to actually do a dark Twilight Zone?
Yeah, he was. And he decided to Kick the Can because the movie had gotten this bad rap in the press. So he wanted to do something that would make us feel good.
And that was a horrible segment.
That was the worst of the lot, without a doubt.
It was the worst of all of them. Even the unfinished John Landis one was better than that.
I know, that's a sad thing.
At least the John Landis one ties it into the Animal House universe.
Right.
Well, I knew we should have shot Niedermeyer. I knew we shouldn't have shot Niedermeyer.
I think the two I enjoyed were, of course, the George Miller segment and the Joe Dante.
And the wraparound segment was
The wraparound segment was really good with Albert Brooks and Dan Aykroyd. That was terrific.
Mm.
But the John Landis segment is like a warm glass of water. You can dump it out, and the Spielberg one is just terrible.
And those are the first two.
But the George Miller one is amazing.
Yeah.
I told my wife it's better than the actual Twilight Zone episode, and she didn't believe me. So
I disagree with that, actually.
Think so?
I think the original segment's better with Shatner looking out the window and looking back because
Lithgow's
totally overdoing it.
He does.
Okay, yeah. guys.
But the alien on the wing, definitely looks better on the film, but Shatner's performance is more restrained. I'm with John.
But can we agree that the best version of that ever is the version where Anthrax is on the wing?
What the hell's that?
The music video for Inside Out by Anthrax.
I haven't seen it.
And he looks out at the window and it's Anthrax playing on the wing of the airplane.
The more you say these things about Anthrax, the more I hate them. I'm just
SNL sketch that was perfectly reenacting that Twilight Zone segment, and it had Jude Law and the William Shatner role. And he was looking out the window in the... like the gremlin's out there, but he's like hanging out with, he's cooking hot dogs with Pearl Jam and stuff.
Oh my God.
And Pearl Jam's on the wing, like waving back or doing the expression that he does. Cause I forget whatever SNL cast member is playing the gremlin, but they were doing the original actor's facial expressions perfectly when he's on the wing. And he just does that stall or whatever. And looking back at Shatner. So it's a pretty funny sketch. I think it's on YouTube. I think you might be able to find it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the few allowed on YouTube. Because, SNL, they're like,
They crack down on that stuff.
Yeah, they allow a few sketches on YouTube, and that's one of them. So, strangely, I wish I could find my favorite, which is the one with Bill Murray playing the out-of-shape Hercules in an Italian peplum movie. That was hysterical, and he's got a dubbed voice and everything, and it's a perfect spoof of the old Steve Reeves movies, except he's a fat, out-of-shape Hercules.
So, Stuart, what have you been watching lately? What's some stuff you've been
the
watching?
The Dots. Just been watching the Dots, that's it.
What the heck is that? I don't even know what that is.
It's a sport.
You just been watching drunks at a bar playing darts? What?
Not drunks at a bar, okay? A world tournament, a World Series tournament. Thank you very much.
World Series of darts, so it's like the Yankees and the
you got to remember, Hunter, we're in our U.S. sports bubble where we love the pussy game of football and, you know, baseball, which is like a
and we watch cricket. Soccer.
Yes, they're trying to force us to watch soccer.
Yeah, exactly. You don't watch it. They're trying to force it upon you.
And when we're upset about stuff, we take a knee.
Yeah. When I was a kid,
you know, in the Tanya Harding days, when you took a knee, you took a knee.
That's right. Fucking kneecap out with a pipe.
I saw a meme today that said when I was a kid, when athletes took a knee, they took a knee. And it had Tanya Harding.
No, I've just been watching darts. They've had the World Match Play Series in Blackpool in the UK, then swing straight over to Auckland, New Zealand, had a three-day tournament there. Then just finished a three-day tournament here on Sunday night, and then over to Brisbane to have the next three-day tournament on the upcoming Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I just finished the Melbourne one, and one of my favourites, Peter Snakebite Wright, won that one. And after watching the Brisbane one, went to the footy on Sunday with my brother, saw the Storm lose by three points, in a fucking bad mood, coming home the rest of the night.
Sorry, mate, I understand. I'm in total empathy.
Yeah. As for TV-wise, about shit people watch, trying to think. Oh, God, Samurai Cop 1 and 2 I watched while I was crook.
Okay.
With the back.
Oh, Samurai Cop, great. Yeah. I actually haven't seen 2 yet.
Don't bother.
I have it, but
Don't get excited by the fact that Tommy Wiseau is in it. Don't do that. Okay. Don't let that be a deal breaker, because it's not.
Well, I think Tommy Wiseau being in The Disaster Artist was more exciting, but I saw parts of Samurai Cop 2, and I just kind of thought it seemed like a cash in.
That woman, that Asian woman, what's her name, Bai Ling, is the worst.
She's horrible.
Oh, she reminds me of some sort of crazy lady who would just stalk you and just God help me, no.
Is that the Bai Ling from The Crow and the Chris Isaac?
Yeah. Well, it's not like there's 5,000 Bai Lings around.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
She was in Crank 2 also.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
So I watched that. Watched Samurai Cop. Yeah, watched Samurai Cop 2. Watched that Looking for Johnny documentary about Johnny Thunders, which I mentioned last week on the episode.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Fantastic Four, Doco.
Which Fantastic Four? The one about the
Corman one.
Movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not a great deal else. Just a lot of work around the house. Hence the reason why last week's episode was so damn late getting out. Just been a lot of shit going on in here. But no, just footy and darts. And I did watch the Ostentatious documentary on The Edge. Or not documentary, I should say. Home video release from 1985 with my brother. We were fucking laughing our asses off on that one.
Mm. But,
none of you guys would know who Ostentatious is.
No.
Fucking home video.
Yeah. But...
So-
I do have a couple of shows on my Netflix queue that I do want to watch, but I'm not in a hurry to see them, which is just Daredevil, finally get around to watching that properly.
It's all right.
And my 12-year-old son's been watching Bates Motel a lot, and I watched a couple episodes with him. I'm like, I'm out. You can watch a kid. I'm done.
I don't know. I'm just not interested in a Norman Bates TV show, you know?
I'm not interested in Norman Bates with an iPhone, because that completely takes me out of the time period of the 50s and 60s. or in the late 40s. Part of
what is interesting about Psycho is how isolated the motel is. The whole thing was the motel is isolated from because the freeways kind of killed the little roadside motel, right?
It's a character unto itself.
Yeah, and so the Bates Motel feels like this relic that is being maintained despite the fact that it's not a money-making operation, and it feels bizarre in Psycho because this was after the freeways came into America and killed these places. So that's what makes it such a creepy, weird place, you know. So I don't know. It's having connectivity with a smartphone
kind of ruins it. Why would you do it? I don't get what the writer's intent was doing it.
It's to sell a show concept, you know. It's based on Psycho, but it's the origin of Norman Bates. I don't know.
Well, you're doing, you know, when you have a smartphone or. God, even if you have a flip phone, it actually makes half the murders of the past impossible.
Yeah.
Because a lot of that involved cutting phone lines, as in the Iran's Golden State Killer. It's like he would cut the phone lines. Well, doesn't matter now.
Yeah. Well, you have to take out the cell phone tower.
That's right.
Right. You got to take it out, terrorist style. But, you know, it's just modern technology makes a lot of that stuff pointless and meaningless. It's, you know, plus they'd have bad Yelp reviews, you know, all the innkeepers. A weirdo. He's a whack job. He's talking to these.
He's got all these birds and he's talking about his mom. Weird.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I don't mean to be a homophobe, but I think the guy's kind of weird. You know, it's. I could see the Yelp reviews. Be getting one star on Yelp. Nobody's going to.
It was sad enough when Gus Van Sant had Vince Vaughn, like, you know, touching himself while watching somebody through a hole. You know, it was
right.
That was already bad enough.
It's like, I don't need to know enough about a villain like that. It's like, I just don't have to know anything about him than what I'm shown. It's like Rob Zombie's obsession with us knowing every little thing about Michael Myers. Well, that's not interesting.
Don't you think that
he was from a redneck family that,
Don't you think that what John said just sounded like something out of Orgasmo? I don't want to sound like a queer or nothing, but don't you think my mom's hot?
Where I got it from.
This band sounds a lot like Depeche Mode. Hey, everybody say Geddy Lee. Come on, greatest bass player in the world, Geddy Lee.
But Bates Motel, I was out. I was like, you can watch it, mate. I'm done. I mean, it takes so much for me to really invest into a show and just watch it. For me to watch a show week in, week out as it's aired on television, I can't do it. I don't have the time. Even with DVRs and all that sort of stuff, I can't do it. I'll just say, look, I'll watch a couple, and then if it comes out, I'll just either stream it or I'll pick up the actual box set. Like, for instance, Ash vs. the Evil Dead, I quite like that first season. I haven't even seen the second season, but I mean...
Same here. I've seen the first season, haven't watched the second one yet.
Well, it kind of wears the novelty out.
Yeah.
It does. It's so much that Ash can really do. I mean...
Well, the second season, I saw the first episode, and it just sort of seemed like, hey, we're hanging out with Ash and his buddies. And
yeah.
I don't know. It just felt... like we were getting a little too, it was a little having too much fun with it, I guess. I don't know. But I liked the first season quite a bit. I mean, I enjoyed it as an extension of those movies. And the first episode was directed by Sam Raimi, and it shows.
It shows, doesn't it? Yeah, big time.
Yeah, it's great. But you know, by the second season, I was kind of, I don't know, I'm going to try it again. I'll give it another stab. I've got it on Blu-ray, so,
really want an Evil Dead 4, just watch Drag Me to Hell. Just without Bruce Campbell, that's all it is.
God, John hates that movie.
Yeah, I don't care for it.
Well, I thought it was quite good. I enjoyed it.
It has that problem. I'll just go ahead and give my slam of it. It has that problem where a character acts unbelievably stupid to advance the plot, and that it gets on my nerves.
John, that's every movie, John.
I enjoyed it because I saw it with an audience in Memphis. So.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean there, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Like the audience John went and watched with True Romance, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You mean just one black guy, like 10 rows back?
Yeah.
I mean, I just remember when... Oh man, I just remember when this this the stuff happened, and it was hilarious because the audience reactions were so gold. But anyway,
we don't do that here. We don't have audience reactions like that, and people yelling out and screaming at the screen. Otherwise, I just get told to fucking shut up. Yeah. No, they really would. They get told to shut up. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it depends on where you see the movie. If you're in the Alamo and you know you're too rowdy, they kick you out. But if you go to AMC, you know, all bets are off. So
okay,
like when I saw Kingsman 2 in a theater full of children, that was weird.
Why would children be there for that?
Wow.
Oh, there was these people who brought tons of kids in to see Kingsman 2, and
I'm surprised they got in.
Oh, my wife and I were like, what is going on? And we were watching this movie going, kids are watching, I'm seeing this. Like, we were like clutching our pearls.
Oh, it's not just the R-rated content. The movie sucks. Why would you put kids through that?
The movie sucks, but my goodness, the R-rated content is especially degenerate, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Good Lord.
More so than the first movie.
There's a lot of irresponsible parenting out there.
Oh, totally. But, yeah. So, John, what about you? What's some stuff you've been watching?
Saw Mission Impossible Fallout today, finally.
Heard it was great.
It's a blast. It's highly recommended. It's great to see a summer movie that actually lives up to the hype and justifies its length and shows you some action you've never seen before and is very top-notch. That's all I ask of these things. You know, it wasn't a superhero movie with a bunch of sitcom-y dialogue. And
it's really sad when Tom Cruise is like the closest thing Americans have to Jackie Chan.
Isn't it awful?
Yeah, it's terrible.
He's also the closest Asians. He's the closest Asians have to Jackie Chan.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, there's an amazing scene where he's running across these rooftops. It's a really... I was like, shit, you know, I know he's probably he's got like a wire on him for stunt work and they just digitally remove it and everything. But still, what he's doing takes some balls. It's like, that's not like an easy thing for an actor to do.
And so. The meme is that Tom Cruise is older now than Wilford Brimley was in Cocoon.
Ooh.
Yeah. But he doesn't look
Watch
though.
The diet, kids. Watch the health.
Watch the diet and join Scientology.
I have my main thing as far as television goes, I've been watching The Avengers, the 60s spy show, not the goddamn Marvel crap. With my son, we've been watching the Tara King episodes, which I've never watched extensively.
Are those the ones with Thanos where he gets the Infinity Gauntlet? Or?
No, these are the ones with Mother, the wheelchair-bound boss. But who they used in the film, strangely enough, the horrible Warner Brothers flop of 97. It's just, I've been enjoying that. It's funny because it's a fantasy version of 60s England, which probably never existed, where they never show London. Watching it when I was a kid, I didn't realize at the time nothing was ever happening in London itself. Nothing's in the city. It's actually filmed in the English countryside. And it's like a nationalist version of England that just probably no way it'll ever exist again. You know, this is back when England made its own cars and everything. And Steed,
wait, mate, you got a license for that television?
Right. Steed is like bowler hat, umbrella, English gentleman that probably never really existed, but I'm catching really cool stuff in it. Like at the end of an episode in the wraparound, he'll be reading a 10/10 comic book album in French. And so they were doing some nods to certain sources there, but it's a lot of fun and never takes itself too seriously. And I was like, boy, there's nothing like this on TV. Maybe in the last 30 years where it's like this kind of smart, intelligent action series that doesn't take itself seriously, but is never really campy. You know, it's funny, but it's not campy and insulting like the way superhero movies are these days.
Did you ever like The Prisoner television show?
Yeah, I love The Prisoner. Yeah.
Okay.
Number six.
Yeah, I like Secret Agent. I noticed they just put that on Prime. Amazon Prime has the Patrick McGoohan Secret Agent series right there, so I guess I'll start watching that again.
That just got released here on home video.
Yeah, these are the remastered prints, and it's never looked like that, because I watched the show on videotape when they were for rent in the 90s in video stores, and so it's good to see that available. And also, theatrically, I saw both Sicario movies. Saw the first one on Blu-ray, the second one, released by a different studio at the second run Elvis Cinema, And I like both of those.
Sergio Salima's son.
Yeah, that's right. So I finally caught up with those, and I enjoyed them. They're not great, but they're good and definitely worth catching. And they had a really cool, like, ominous music scores. And their politics, considering it's dealing with the border and the problems at the border and with Mexico, it is surprisingly very un-Hollywood in its viewpoint.
Well, I think Denis Villeneuve, the guy who did Sicario and Blade Runner and stuff like that, his movies seem surprisingly based.
Yeah, they do.
You know?
I agree.
Like the new Blade Runner, I could not believe how that movie really spoke to my political anxieties.
Well, they're written, both of Sicario films are written by Taylor Sheridan, I think is his name, and he doesn't seem to have a West Coast view of the world in politics.
Well, you know, thank goodness, because practically all of our entertainment comes from the West Coast, so
right.
West Coast views get imposed upon all of us.
Well, and this is the interesting thing. The first Sicario film has Emily Blunt as an FBI agent or whatever she is, DEA. She's out of her element. She's completely unequipped to deal with how, what's his name, Josh Brolin's character and especially Benicio del Toro's character deal with bad guys. She can't deal with it.
I saw some people claiming, like, they were going, oh, I hated Sicario because I hated how they treated Emily Blunt's character.
Yeah, yeah, my wife had problems with it because of how she was treated in the film. It's like, she's not Angelina Jolie kickboxing Navy SEALs and stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm sick of that stuff.
It's like, she's really shocked by what she's seeing. And so, in another Taylor Sheridan movie, Wind River, they had one of the Olsen girls, the actress that was in Godzilla, she's playing an FBI agent who's completely out of her element and unequipped to deal with the situation.
Well, that's really interesting. That's something that I would want to watch. You know, I don't like seeing these movies where these characters have no problems and are able to just, you know, magically deal with these things, you know.
Yeah, they're all Vasquez and aliens, you know.
Like, I remember when Mila Jovovich would show up in a movie and kick everyone's butt, it was kind of a novelty. Now it's old, you know.
It's become the standard.
It's like I mean, Mila Jovovich almost gets a pass just because, you know, that's what she's always done, you know.
But
I see a Resident Evil movie, I'm like, okay, Mila's going to do her thing. You know, Paul W.S. Anderson's going to make her look awesome, and it's cool. But you know, it's we see that in everything now, where it's just you know, oh, it's another butt kicking woman. You know, can we not have characters who are human, please, that have problems, that encounter issues that they have to overcome?
Right, you know? And now the other cool thing about Sicario is Josh Brolin is not playing the badass alpha. He's playing like an almost hippie cop, and you know,
he's his dad.
Basically, yeah, and like he's wearing Crocs while at the headquarters and stuff, and dressing like a hippie. But Benicio del Toro is playing. Basically, he's doing Charles Bronson. He's playing a Bronson, like if Charles Bronson played the Punisher, if he was Frank Castle. And it's the best use of Benicio del Toro ever, because I've seen some movies where he's been awful and miscast and obviously ADR'd because his performance was so poor that he had to reloop himself. Here, they use him just right. Like, there's a scene where he stares at a MS-13 gangster wannabe in one scene, and he just gives him a total Bronson stare, like straight out of the first Death Wish. So it's like, you know, maybe now I know why he was considered for the Death Wish remake when it was a different directors were having a pass at it. At one point, he was considered for Paul Kersey.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. But it's pretty good. Like, I'd say, you know, rent both of them are worth renting. They're definitely worth renting. I wouldn't say buy them, but
I'm definitely going to check them out, because I remember when Sicario came out, everybody was saying, you know, check this movie out. You know, that and Arrival made kind of Denis Villeneuve the sort of new director du jour. And I hadn't seen anything he'd done until Blade Runner, and I went, okay, you know,
this is him doing a gritty action film on the border, and you know, I would definitely say they're worth a look. I didn't think they were great, but they were worth a look. They're definitely
is it as good as The Counselor?
better than The Counselor.
The Counselor is one of those movies that is simultaneously awful and amazing at the same time.
Yeah,
but not in a bad movie way. It's just it's an art house. It's an art house version of bad and good, if right. that makes sense. It's so bizarre and strange, but you know, it's so bought into what it's doing. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a bizarre film we'll have to cover sometime. But
yeah,
also I really, really dig the Sicario soundtracks. I'm actually more likely to buy the CDs than the movie itself because it's got a real looming like John Carpenter meets like Goblin type of sound to it.
Oh well, I'm sold. That's yeah. the kind of soundtrack I like.
Like Benicio's badass character actually has his own theme music when he's going.
So it's basically like an Italian movie, is what.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I will definitely.
So that's why they got Sergio Salima's kid to do the second one.
Right, right, and I think my wife was put off by the follow up because there is no female character for the audience.
Yeah, well, I saw that it's totally. You know, yeah. Males away.
Oh yeah, man, it's balls to the wall, man. It's
Sicario almost feels like what was that? What was that South American film series? Elite Squad.
Yes, yes.
It's the Elite Squad. It seems like the American Elite Squad.
That's but this doesn't have sympathy for the poor the way the Elite Squad's probably had.
Okay, because I had heard Elite Squad when that came out. Everybody was saying, "Oh, this is a fascist movie."
Yeah, really? You know, I couldn't. I think I tried to watch a sequel and couldn't get
okay,
into
the
it.
Okay, the sequel I heard tried to remedy the errors. Oh,
okay.
So I heard the first Elite Squad was like, you know, it was like Benito Mussolini made it or something.
Oh, I gotta order it now.
He's gonna watch it, fuckface.
Il Duce.
The Duce, you know, was behind the camera. He made it at Cinecittà, but
yeah, here they don't apologize. They seem to be like, fuck it, we're going to have a woman in this movie. After Garo saw the second one, he said it's pretty much build the wall of the movie.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, Josh Brolin is actually good friends with Donald Trump.
Interesting. I didn't know
is
that.
He really? Most
people, the web has probably been like scrubbed clean of these quotes. But he has said, he goes, everybody thinks I'm some sort of left-wing liberal. He goes, I am a Democrat. He goes, but I lean more libertarian, and I'm good friends with Donald Trump, and I think he's a good guy.
Hope his mother-in-law, or hope he's, yeah, his stepmom doesn't know that.
Yeah, well, who knows? Well, you know,
crazy old fucking Barbara Streisand.
Stepmom.
Yeah. Stupid
maybe he didn't
cow.
Like it when dad left mom for the singer.
Well, let me bring up a few movies I've watched lately. I watched Kenji Fukasaku's new Battles Without Honor and Humanity, and he did the Battles Without Honor and Humanity series.
Yeah.
And then he did a trilogy, the new Battles Without Honor and Humanity.
Oh, okay.
And new Battles Without Honor and Humanity is the first movie in the trilogy, although they're unrelated, but it's basically a remake of Battles Without Honor and Humanity. And I thought it kind of sucked. I like the first one. I think it's kind of got a lot of kinetic energy and, you know, it has a lot of politics and it's sort of sleazy and, you know, gritty. This one, it has a lot of that stuff, but it just feels stale. Didn't really care for, I know you don't like the sort of documentary style Yakuza movies that Fukasaku does, John.
No, I don't even like the original, five yeah. film series. I
do like it. But I've never seen the stuff that who's the actor who's like the quintessential Toho guy? I forget it. Not Toho.
Ken Takakura.
Ken Takakura. I've only ever seen the Yakuza with him because his stuff's just not available here.
No, his stuff. There's almost like that's the best movies. Even the just average ones that were churned out are well worth watching and much better than what I've seen of Kenji Fukasaku with Bunta Sugawara completely overacting. For yeah. 88 minutes. And I like Bunta Sugawara, but in those movies, you know, another problem I have is they're supposed to be like these docudramas, but they're full of anachronisms. They're dressed like 1975 and it's set in the 1950s. And
they're
very on my nerves.
Yeah, no, those are all valid criticisms. And especially, you know, the gunplay in it, I think, is supposed to feel extremely frantic and like intense, but it almost feels like people who've never held a gun before just randomly flailing it around.
Because they don't know what the hell they're doing with guns. Yeah, right. They do the thing that 1930s and 1940s actors would do, is they would jab the gun as they fire.
Yeah. They're throwing a punch when they shoot.
Like, if you ever watch a Superbad show, every time they're shooting George Reeves, they're like dread jabbing their gun at him like six times, and they throw the gun at him. And, you know, some comedians claim there's episodes where Superman ducks the gun when they throw it after the bullet's bouncing off of him. I don't know if that's true.
But, you know, I like the original Battles movies despite their flaws. This one was not entertaining to me. It just felt like kind of a retread that, you know, it was tired. It was stale. Just.
Yeah.
I forced my wife out of, you know, possible, just for comedic purposes, I made her watch Metallica, Some Kind of Monster.
Mm-hmm.
because I wanted to just sort of see what she thought of it. And she was like, these people are all idiots.
Yeah.
Except Torben. Except
who?
Except Torben Ulrich.
Oh, yeah, Torben Ulrich, you know. My wife was going, why is his dad there? What's going on?
In truth, though, think about it. Can you think of any rock documentary where the musicians ever come off smart?
No, but this one, I just remember watching it in the theater going, does this band want this out here? I mean, they look like idiots, you know? They look like jerks.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Song Remains the Same. I could say Robert Plant's got a good sense of humor, you know, but I don't know.
There's something, I mean, Some Kind of Monster is always fascinating to me because it's so naked and the band has never countersignaled it. They've never said, you know, we hate this movie, it's inaccurate. They re-released it on their own label, you know, Blackened, their Metallica's label. You know, the Blu-rays on released under that moniker. So, mm-hmm. You know, but and there's a follow up on it where they're with the filmmakers talking about the movie. I mean, Bruce Sinofsky's on speakerphone because he was so sick at the time before he died. But you know, it was just it's to me it is the closest thing to like a real life Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
It's so embarrassing and strange and weird. And my wife was just going, what is wrong? These people are ridiculous. What's going on? So my wife's a professional musician and she was just.
Well, the more professional you get, the less professional you act.
Yeah, no, it's true. And
I mean, that's just the way it is. I was thinking maybe you'd sit down and watch the Dixie Chicks documentary. I still haven't talked to anybody who's actually seen that.
Oh God! I can't stand that.
With Rick Rubin, they were mad.
They were mad. Oh yeah,
they were so mad. They were really mad when they recorded this.
I absolutely hate Rick Rubin. You know, he's you know, Rick Rubin is one of those guys where you know you look at his early work with like Slayer, The Cult, stuff like that, and you go, this guy's a genius. And lately it's just Rick Rubin shows up, puts his name on the record, inhales a couple of tofu dogs, and
he's a hack. He's a massive hack. But
just gave him way too much clout, you know.
Well, the last good Rick Rubin production is Donovan's Sutras, his Donovan's comeback record that was completely buried in back in the mid-90s, and that's about it.
Oh, John, did you get that Ravi Shankar CD yet?
No, I've got a couple ordered at the library waiting for me. They had like Hollywood Bowl recordings and some other, you know, these something sessions. Yeah. So they had a few odds and ends, and I just finally got my replacement credit card after a PayPal hacking in today, and I'm going to order some serious classic Ravi Shankar.
Very good.
Yeah, because I want to get, I'm getting more into that.
You want to get one, the double CD set, the Ravi Shankar, the Chicken Vindaloo collection.
Okay. Well, yeah, there's some interesting cheap sets. Like I think I told you in messaging is like a lot of his 50s and 60s stuff is public domain in Europe. So there's a lot of cheap, you know, collections available now.
Are we the first podcast ever to talk about Ravi Shankar?
Possibly.
If you're talking Beatles related topics, then probably not.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah.
Other no, we're than that, we're talking yeah. to, about him outside of the Beatles.
That's
influence.
Right.
I'm just as a musician, because I was listening to a lot of Donovan in the car, and I was like, I've never listened to Ravi Shankar, and I think he was a huge inspiration to Donovan in the late 60s, so, you know, check it out.
And the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
Right, of course.
Yes. The great swindler. That's what he was. He only dragged all the Beatles and Mick Jagger to Bangor just to screw Marianne Faithfull. That's all he wanted. That was the only reason why he didn't give a fuck about the Beatles or anyone else. He just wanted
all those gurus have that issue. Like, they always seem like these perfect beings, and that turns out they just wanted to fuck a bunch of hot looking groupies.
Well, that's the case with every cult leader. You know, yeah. Every cult leader is just it's just an excuse to, you know, for sexual degeneracy.
I've been trying to get Hunter to review The Family with me. And that falls apart for the same reason, as that they got into the free love a little too seriously.
What's wrong with that?
Well, I think when this guru was like telling different, you know, okay, you're going to be with him and you're going to be with him. It was like he was arranging like a crazy ass California sex cult, and they had started off as a yoga cult.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, you know, it's
as long as I'm paired up with a woman, I don't give a shit.
But if you watch the documentary, then you'll see when their guru dies in a hang gliding accident. So,
that's hilarious.
I mean, it's a really interesting documentary. It got me really fascinated by that stuff. So,
yeah.
So another movie I watched, I rewatched The Alamo.
You know what? I think we should just stop right here, because I think everybody's switched off by now.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's like, oh, fuck off. I'll come back next week.
I watched the one with Billy Bob Thornton, the John Lee Hancock one from the Audies with Billy Bob Thornton as Davy Crockett and Dennis Quaid as Sam Houston. I think it's very good. I think it's probably the best Alamo movie that's been made.
He's gonna watch it, my face.
But it makes the character seem very human. I don't know. I really liked it. My wife really liked it too. I watched it with her because she was interested in watching it. And I also watched a movie that I think is sort of influential in weird ways. Stuart Gordon's Dagon, the H.P. Lovecraft film. I think that movie, while it has sort of just been a weird oddity on video, I think that movie has had a massive influence on video games. Because if you watch that movie and then you play Resident Evil 4, you will go, which is, you know, one of the, which was a game in that series that was sort of a game changer for video games. A lot of games that came after sort of imitated it. If you play Resident Evil 4 after watching Dagon, you go, okay, the people who made that movie watched this. I mean, the people who made that game watched this movie, because it is so dead on with its Spanish setting and sort of zombie-like weird tentacled creatures screaming in Spanish while they chase the main character. It's so dead on. And, I don't think that's ever really been discussed, because when I played Resident Evil 4 the first time on the GameCube when it came out, I went, oh my gosh, this is just like Dagon, the Stuart Gordon movie. And, you know, I've never heard anybody talk about it. But even the characters in it look like the villagers and the people in the game. It's very interesting when you sort of put them together. But it recently got a re-release from Vestron Video on Blu-ray, so that's why I watched it again.
Yeah, I remember it was one of the last VHS tapes I rented, and I remember it was a good-looking Stuart Gordon film, which is a rarity. And I thought it was probably one of his more faithful Lovecraft adaptations compared to the other two.
Yeah, and the thing is, it has the name Dagon, which is a very short Lovecraft story, but it's actually an adaptation of The Shadow Over Innsmouth.
Right, which is probably the best H.P. Lovecraft story.
Yeah,
it's the one with a beginning, a middle, and end, and actual twist and all that stuff.
And what's funny is, if you play the PC game, or it was actually an Xbox game as well, called Call of Cthulhu, if you play that game, it's also an adaptation of Shadow Over Innsmouth. It's the it is a very faithful video game adaptation of Shadow Over Innsmouth.
Oh, wacky.
Yeah, very faithful. It's in a small New England town, and you know, if you get a gun, you know, in that game, you'll have a couple of bullets, and that's all you get.
Because there's one for you, and one for your friend.
Exactly. I mean, I played that game, and it was insanely difficult because it's so intense in what it allows you to do. But it's an adaptation of that story as well. But yeah, Dagon, it's Shadow Over Innsmouth in Spain instead of New England.
Okay.
Fuck you, Midnight Movie Cowboys. I want my time back.
I don't think it's that bad. I think our audience will, you know, like us just talking about a few different things. I don't know. Let us know. Go to our Facebook group. Tell us. You guys are very cool.
We'll title this one The Boring Show, like the young ones would.
Exactly.
Boring.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. That's it for me as far as movies go, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I did like Deadpool 2. There's a shocking thing to state.
You told me, you said it was basically Crank 3.
Yes.
You said
it was a Crank film. It didn't feel like the first film at all to me. It was just like a Crank film. And there was a scene where the X-Force does a Halo jump and they basically all get wiped out for one stupid reason or another. And I laughed like a maniac at that.
I want to see Deadpool 2 after you said that. I didn't really care. Yeah. I kind of wanted to see it because a dude I work with at work, you know, was pretty closely connected to it. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, I'll watch it. You know, he was pushing it pretty hard. But when you said it was basically Crank 3, I was like, okay, I got to watch it now.
Well, like in the scene in the X-Men mansion, there's a portrait of Karl Marx on the wall in the background. And it's like, I don't know what they're trying to say.
But it's something we've always known if you're a little woke, you know.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, boys?
That's it. I think, you know, just stuff we've been watching lately, you know.
And we didn't plan for a show.
No, we didn't plan for a show, but we wanted to get something out to you where we talk about a few random things. So, you know, if you thought it was terrible, you know, let us know. We'll be a little more judicious in the future. But I think it's pretty good. I don't know. I feel good about it. Stuart doesn't, but I do.
Stuart's been watching darts, so you know.
That's all I give a shit about is the darts.
No, once you're into the darts, it's just beer and darts, man.
Well, Stuart's favorite superhero movie is Daredevil because it just has Colin Farrell throwing darts and listening to House of Pain. You know?
Oh, that's right. Stu loves the crazy rap.
I'll tell you why I love darts. Because you don't need to be an elite athlete. You don't need to train 600 hours a fucking week getting your body into shape. I saw some guys on this series that were the size of a house. Like, they were literally walking earthquakes when they come down the bloody hall at the ramp. So, you can be as fat as you want. It doesn't matter.
I imagine they all look like Fat Bastard from Austin Powers too.
Oh, some of them do. Yeah. There are some of them that are slim, but there's not many. A lot of them have just got these massive guts on them.
They just drink pints and throw darts.
Well, they don't drink. They don't drink beer on stage. No, they don't do that on stage. Oh, I'm sure backstage they would, but not on stage.
Well, I just mean when they're training, you know.
I don't think you could because, you know, that's a bit of a misnomer because you've got to aim for such a small area with a dart. I mean, you can't do it when you're pissed drunk, can you?
But what if you carved a bullseye into your head like Colin Farrell in Daredevil?
So you're going to throw a dart. You're going to throw a dart in the back of your head, are you? Or are you going to be like fucking Seth Rich? You put a bolt in the back of your own head.
Yeah, I mean.
God, that Daredevil movie was so low budget to introduce Bullseye playing darts at a bar. Frank Miller wouldn't have done that shit. He had Bullseye like plucking a credit card through a cab driver's throat.
No, that's what even Kevin Smith wouldn't have done that. Kevin Smith, in Kevin Smith's Daredevil comics, Bullseye is like, throwing forks at people and stuff. You know? It's totally insane.
Daredevil is a character I don't know why the hell they picked him for film or TV.
Fuck, because
he seems
Smith.
Like he's very rooted in comic book physicality.
Yeah. Oh, they picked him because he's popular.
Yeah.
The best depiction of darts has been American Werewolf in London, where that guy is throwing darts.
You made me miss.
Yeah, it's a big deal. You missed the board. It's a big deal.
I've actually got an Irvine Welsh written miniseries that's about some Brits, like London guys trying to get it, or Scottish guys getting into darts, but I've never watched it. It was one of those things that I think it was called like Good Darts or something, and I ordered because it was like £2 off Amazon UK, and I guess it was this flop miniseries written by Irvine Welsh, but still haven't watched it. I'll have to give it a spin.
Well, watch darts for a start.
Right.
Learn the rules. It's not that hard. Pretty easy.
I played darts at a bar.
Oh, you played? Actually, you played darts at a bar. Okay, let me ask you then. How can you finish in darts?
Shit, I don't remember because it was like 25 years ago.
You never fucking threw a dart in your life. You're lying.
Dude, I threw darts. I did.
Okay, so you played them the wrong way. Okay. You can only finish in darts either with a bullseye, the red part of the bullseye, mind you, not the green, or a double. It's the only way you can finish in darts.
That's the only way you finish? Okay.
That's it.
I don't know. I know what our drunk rules were, so.
Mate, it's not that difficult. It's a fucking... hit a double or hit a bullseye. It's not that hard.
Yeah, no. So I used to play darts. And I actually was one of the few people to ever win a terrible t-shirt, like at those Carney games where you throw the dart in the little red star that's super thin. Like, I did it, and won, like, a Led Zeppelin t-shirt that shrank to baby size in the wash.
That's it. Can we just call us at the end? I'm just done. Still that Led Zeppelin t-shirt shrinking. I'm out of here.
Got to get back to your darts tournament.
No, you smart ass. I've watched my fucking darts. I've got to wait till they come back on Friday.
Maybe we should do a best depictions of darts in movies.
I'll do still a single episode of my own where I can just wax lyrical about darts because you guys will just sit there and make jokes about a sport I love and I'll end up saying fuck off the both of yous. So, no, I don't want to do that. No, there's actually a documentary out there called The House of the Flying Arrows, which I do want to see. I've heard mixed reviews on it. I heard it's good and I heard it's not so great. But that is a current documentary out, I think from 2015 or 16, about darts and the history of it. So if I can get my hands on that, it's not available here in Australia. So I'd like to see it and then possibly do a show on it.
Now, Stu, did the praise come from the dart fans and then the negative reviews come from just the common reviewers or vice versa?
I honestly don't know. I mean...
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think you could actually sit there and say, well, not a very good depiction of the history of darts if you don't know the history of it. So,
right.
Yeah. But then it might be just some people that just being trolls and giving it 2 stars out of 5.
I will ask my Facebook friend, Armand White, if he's seen it. So there.
There you go. Oh, there you go. The final authority right there.
Exactly. That's all you need.
Yeah.
In my classroom... I have Armand White's book, The Resistance.
Really?
On my shelf, yeah.
Okay. Are you going to put The Stone Mail by Joe Carducci on there, too?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Get the kids reading. So there you go.
Joe Carducci is the man.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, no, the Stone Mail is in my classroom, believe me.
Okay, good.
I'm actually literally going to use it in class when I talk about early movies, because there's information in there that I haven't seen anywhere else.
Yeah,
I
mean, you don't.
I'm sure that information is other places, but it's just stuff you don't come across very often.
Right, it's not emphasized too much.
Like Francis Ford, that narrative he puts together in there is so beautiful. I love it. I want to sort of take a moment with it.
So you're gonna sit there and fucking masturbate with it or something, are you?
No, what are you talking about? No.
When you see you sit there and take a moment, will you, and do fucking whack off over the pages or something?
No. Just, you know, wax poetic, you know? It's good.
Oh. Alright, fair enough then.
Yeah.
Whatever floats your boat.
Floats my boat. All right. So, next time, show will be more focused, fellas, I'm sure.
You're looking for someone, but it's not Kiss.
It's not Kiss, indeed.
I wish it fucking was. I'd gladly do Attack of the Phantoms or Phantom of the Park again any day.
Yeah. We should do that as a joke just once a year. We do Attack of the Phantoms again.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Put me down. I'm actually going to hold you to that now. You should never have said it.
Oh, no.
I still have my DVD copy, so, you know.
Yeah.
You look at the subway, but it's not Kiss.
You're looking for someone. But it's not Kiss.
Boy, I didn't think he'd set him off that much. I just didn't play around.
Paul Stanley.
We could just have all Paul Stanley.
That needs to be our top line.
Oh, don't tempt me. Seriously, don't tempt me. I may just do it.
Well, you could just get Eddie Medina to say the things that we don't have.
We need some Star Child ramblings, and we also need some Eddie Trunk, and I think we're good.
Yeah, there.
Oh, God, Eddie Trunk. Eddie Trunk's on board.
A couple of dice snippets. That's all you need.
We can start the episode, Hunter, one week with that horrible Mark Slaughter intro.
Oh no!
God, that's hideous.
This is Mark Slaughter wailing on the guitar.
We'd try
to recreate it.
Welcome to the MSC. This intro needed a new fresh coat of paint, so we got our friend Mark Slaughter to do an intro for us.
We didn't want to use the same guitar intro that Dee Snider uses on his podcast.
No. The defunct.
Dee Snider's podcast that doesn't exist anymore. But
lazy bastard. I kind of miss it at times. I wish I could hear Dee just lose his shit. Just, go off on people when they ask questions.
It was bad.
It
just degenerated really fast.
Yeah. Oh, the absolute bottom of the barrel for that podcast, when he did that apology that he couldn't do a show for an hour. I was like,
he just done one. I can't do a show.
Literally 60 minutes he apologized he couldn't do a show. He's like, well, you've just done one, D, you idiot.
Yeah, that's when it was over.
That was a red flag. Yeah, I need to go. It's like, D, just go. Take your mic and go. All right, fellas, I think that'll do us. We're just now just pissing on D. Snider, which we could do it for another hour, but I got shit to do.
Yeah, looking for someone, but it's not Kiss.
You're looking for someone, but it's not Kiss.
All right, let's just stop it now. Enough.
It's old now, but it's still funny to me. Yeah.
Oh, you wait till I load this thing up with more sounds. It's going to be even better next time. All right.
I'm very excited. I can't wait.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, fellas. Well, with that, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
And I will say Megaduck.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.